I know you all are so lucky you get to see me so many times, right? That's how that works. Really, our staff is just paying me and Brenna back for last fall. If you remember, we had this family event in our life, and then Brenna had a major surgery, and so Tanya had major surgery this week, and then Craig decided to, you know, break his Achilles heel in Tanzania, which, you know, go figure, and then he had a kidney stone, and so they're all paying us back this week for, like, what we did to them in the fall, and so you're stuck with me for a lot of pieces that they don't normally let me be a part of, so bless you. Bless you. That's how that works. I'm excited because we are digging in. Oh, and then Andre is on vacation this week. And so Allison got charged as a high school student. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can clap for her. Normally I tell people, let me critique, you encourage. All right? And so, but I'm excited to have Allison step into that leadership role in Andrea's absence today. So that's good. Hey, we are still working through the final week of Jesus' life through the Gospel of Luke. And I've been pretty excited because as this leads us to the cross, I've tried to work through and look at these things from a different perspective. And I always look for what's the golden nugget that we typically miss? What's missing here? Or we know these stories, especially if we've been in the church for a long time. And so they can just become sort of rote for us if we're not careful. And so it's the Garden of Gethsemane. And Jesus goes into the garden. We all know this, right? And he prays. And he prays so hard that blood comes out of his sweat. And it's kind of a crazy thing. So this is my big question that I've been asking. What's he so anxious about? Like, what is Jesus most anxious about? And I think for us, the answer seems to be pretty obvious and pretty simple. Of course, it's the cross, right? And the cross was going to bring pain, and the cross was going to bring suffering, and the cross was going to bring death. And wouldn't this bring high levels of anxiety to a human? But I still think there's something bigger and there's something deeper, there's something far more meaningful that's happening. This isn't just a moment of fear for Jesus, it's a breaking point. And that's what we've been talking about is breaking points. And when I say breaking points, I'm not talking about a moment of weakness. How many of you in middle school or high school ever built bridges out of popsicle sticks? Anybody ever do this? That's it, about 12 of us. Wow, how many of you know what I'm talking about, at least? And you've maybe seen it done. All right, so I remember in middle school, and I think it was seventh grade, and I think we had some sort of wood shop class, and we took a quarter of the whole year, and we were rotating in our electives. Now, I remember, if you remember, building these bridges out of popsicles, maybe in school, maybe when you're a kid, maybe Boy Scouts or something like that, but you glue them all together, and you're trying to build your most stable bridge, and you're trying to make them as strong as possible as you possibly can, and then comes the test, right? And you're competing against everybody in your class to see who's bridge can take the most weight before breaking. You know what I'm talking about. If not, I'm just going to move on because I'm worried. You're like, I don't know what this guy is even discussing, right? And so you start adding weight to your bridge and slowly at first, and I'd like to say a few pounds, but I don't recall if mine actually made it to a few pounds or not. But everyone leans in, and you start watching closely, and as you're adding the weight to see if your bridge is going to be the bridge that wins, you know what's coming, and what's about to come is this breaking point, right? And eventually, the weight becomes too much, and the bridge snaps because it can't carry the load that's on it. And you know what I'm talking about, because that's how we experience life too, is it not? That a lot of life, it's kind of like we're a bridge and the weight just keeps getting added and eventually it feels like we're just about to snap and the pressure builds and the stress increases and the circumstances pile on and at some point we hit our limit and we break. And that's Luke 22. This is a deep moment. And what was Jesus most anxious about? Well, this is the moment where the full weight of evil and suffering and darkness reaches its point, and something has to give. Something has to give. And this is the moment where everything should fall apart. And I say should because with Jesus, it doesn't, right? And so we're going to look at Luke chapter 22, And Luke doesn't give us a lot. If you want to know a lot more about what's going on in the Mount of Olives and the Garden of Gethsemane, you're going to have to read John, Matthew, and Mark, because they give us a lot more. Luke doesn't give us a lot. He just gives us sort of the details. But this is what it says. Luke chapter 22, verse 39. And he came out and he went, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples followed him. And when he came to the place, he said to them, "Pray that you may not enter into temptation." And I love this, because prayer is usually not our first line of offense or defense. It's usually later. But so far in Luke's gospel, we've been told multiple times, Luke chapter 10, the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few. Do what? Pray, right? Don't strategize. Don't try to figure it out. Don't create a program. Do what?
Pray.
And so what does he do when the weight of the entire world and all of evil is on him? What does he tell us, or his disciples and us vicariously? To what?
Pray.
To pray. To pray. That's huge. But this is a breaking point, and this breaking point is a lot bigger than we think, because he tells the disciples, pray that you may not enter into temptation. And the ESV doesn't do an incredible job at translating this word temptation, because the Greek word can actually mean both temptation and trial. Now that's interesting, because we know what's about to happen to Jesus. He's about to be arrested, and he's about to be put on. This is interesting. In a very literal way, Jesus could be telling his disciples, pray that you don't go to trial. And we're like, well, it's bigger than that. It's trials and temptations. And we know what we've been taught. They fall asleep and they fell into temptation because they cared about themselves more than they care. Sometimes I think we miss some things. It could be that he was just saying, listen, I don't want you to sin. That's temptation. But he's also probably saying, I want you to be able to withstand what's about to happen, what's about to come. Why? Because something massive is about to happen here. On one hand, there is an immediate human trial where Jesus will be arrested, tried before rulers, tried before the authorities, condemned, and then crucified. On the other hand, there's this more deeper and cosmic trial, the moment where darkness rises, where evil seems to take control, and all of history converges on this particular moment, and this is the breaking point, and Jesus is standing at the center of it. And so do you see how there's a trial and a trial? You know how we like to play with our words here, right? Bread and bread, and water, water, and light, light, and trial, trial. There's this trial about to happen. And it's a literal trial before authorities. And there's this massive cosmic fight going on where evil seems to be descending and very much going to take over what's going on with Jesus. And so if we keep reading here, Luke chapter 22, verse 41, it says this. And so Jesus withdrew from them about a stone's throw, and he knelt down and he himself began to pray. And he said, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. And I love this because Luke gives us a little tidbit. There seemed to be an angel from heaven who appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground. Now, by the way, Luke is the only one who gives us that information. Wouldn't be surprising, especially considering he's a doctor. He was probably intrigued by that little bit of fact. But Luke is the only one who tells us this. And what Luke tells us is that Jesus withdraws a little bit from the other disciples, and he kneels and he begins to pray. And his prayer is very simple. Father, if you are willing, please remove this cup from me. This is not a hesitation to the plan. And it's important for us to understand that. Because remember, Luke has been telling us all along who's in charge here. Jesus is. Right? Jesus knew where the donkey was. Jesus knew where the house was. Who is in charge of all of these events? Jesus is. He's the driver of this bus. He is not a victim of passive circumstances. Jesus absolutely knows what's going on. And so remember, Luke has been telling us all along, Jesus is in charge. He's driving. He's not responding to these passive circumstances. He's driving to the cross. This is what he knows he has to do. Therefore, this prayer is not a hesitation because Jesus knows exactly why he came to earth. This is something else. This is something else. And at this breaking point, Jesus doesn't run. He surrenders. He doesn't run. He completely and totally surrenders. And Jesus is starting to feel the full weight of all of the reality of suffering and evil at its worst and darkest moment. And this is the hour. And Jesus says, "Not my will, but yours." He doesn't run. He surrenders. Verse 45 says, "And when he rose from prayer, he came to his disciples, and he found them what? He found them sleeping, right? For sorrow. And he said to them, 'Why are you sleeping? Why are you sleeping? You have no idea what is about to happen. And I just told you, pray that you don't fall into the temptation, because I can't have you fall into the temptation.'" The reason Jesus can't have Peter, James, and John fall into temptation and fall into trials is because the future of the church is being built on these guys. And if they follow Jesus where Jesus is going, which is what? The cross. How's the launch of the church going to work? Is it? No. And so Jesus is like, "I've just told you to pray that you don't fall into temptation, that you get your heart right." And we're going to see in a moment, Peter still doesn't get it. He still doesn't get it. And so Jesus tells his disciples to pray, but they fell asleep. And when the moment comes, they will scatter. Not because Jesus wants their failure, by the way, but because he is about to face something that only he can face. Nobody else can carry it. And this is important because Jesus says, "Pray that you may not enter into temptation or trial." In other words, Jesus may be saying, "Listen, there's some spiritual failure that's about to happen, but what I need you to do is I need you to pray that you don't get pulled into what I'm about to get into. I need you to avoid that." Because Jesus knows what's coming: arrest, interrogation, trial, execution. And in these moments like this, when the leader goes down, often the followers go down with them. Meaning Jesus could be very concerned because they are not meant to carry the burden right here that Jesus has to carry. And they may not be able to stand trial like Jesus is going to be able to stand trial. The disciples' role, it comes later. And his role is now, and it must be done absolutely by himself and alone. Jesus knows that when this moment comes, everything is going to unravel so quickly and so fast that if they're not careful, they could be swept into the trial that they were never meant to face in the first place. And so even though Jesus knows they're going to scatter, Peter is going to deny him, and in a way they sort of have to. Because what he's about to face, he has to face on his own and alone. And this is crucial. I think it's absolutely crucial because Jesus doesn't go into this moment as a passive victim. Jesus is going as a representative. And what is he representing? He's carrying Israel's story. He's carrying the weight of human sin. And he's carrying all of the brokenness of the entire world on his shoulders as he enters into this very moment that nobody else can get into on their own. And so let's keep reading. Luke chapter 22, verse 47. It says this: "While he was still speaking, there came a crowd, and the man called," there he is again, "Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He drew near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, 'Judas, would you betray the Son of Man with a kiss?' And when those who were around him saw what would follow, they said, 'Lord, shall we strike with the sword?' And one of them," which we know from the other Gospels is Peter, this is where Jesus would be like, "This is why I told you to pray." Like any good parent would say, right? One of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. But Jesus said, no more of this. It's the second time in the last week we've heard Jesus say enough. No more. No more of this. And Jesus, he touched the ear and he was healed. And then Jesus said to the chief priests and the officers of the temple and the elders who had come out against him, have you come out against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you day after day in the temple, you did not lay hands on me, but this is your hour and the power of darkness. When Jesus said, this is your hour, the hour of darkness, the power of darkness, I believe this is actually the breaking point in history. So let me discuss the disciples for a moment. Because there they are, and yet again, they don't fully understand what's going on. Jesus has said over and over and over and over again, we're not going to fight the way you think we're going to fight. We're not going to fight the way you anticipate fighting. We're not going to war. We're not going to take over anybody. I'm going to die. That's how it's going to happen. He's predicted it over and over and over. Peter knows this. He's heard Jesus talk about it for three lengthy years. That he would die and he would be buried and he'd rise again. Like he's told them, like in the days of Jonah, he's told them about the temple collapsing and then being rebuilt. He's told them over and over and over again that this is what he was going to do. This is who he is. And the moment they needed to be prepared for, they were sleeping instead of praying. And I think part of Jesus' concern is that they cannot be swept away with what's coming because their role is still coming later. This means this is not ultimately about failure, that we spend too much time, I think, talking about around Easter, by the way. This is about Jesus and a breaking point. And that's what this whole series is about. And here's the paradox. The paradox is the breaking point looks like darkness is winning. Doesn't it feel like that? The paradox is it feels like evil is prevailing. Like evil's winning here and that everything is about to fall apart, that everything is about to collapse. And yet this is the very moment where I think God is doing some of his greatest work. And this is such an important lesson for you and me. Because sometimes when we feel like our little popsicle bridge we call life has too much weight and it's about to buckle and break, it's usually in those very moments that God starts doing some of his most beautiful and greatest work in our lives. It's a truth. And yet we do everything we can to avoid those moments, do we not? Everything we can. And I think the lesson is that this is where God shows up. This is where God starts doing this. This is usually where we're most willing to let God do some of his greatest work. And so what actually looks like defeat is actually victory in disguise. And what looks like the end is actually the beginning. And so what? What is all of this then for us? We all know what breaking points feel like, don't we? Have you ever had one? You've ever been on the verge of one? Are you on the verge of one today? Right? Where it just feels like the weight of life is crushing down and piling on and we cannot escape it. We know what this feels like. We all know what it feels like when life is overwhelming, do we not? We know what it feels like when things fall apart and unravel. We know what it feels like when it seems like darkness is winning. And in these moments, everything shouts so loud to us that this is the end. This is it. I'd just rather die than try to go through this. These are the kind of things we think and say. Or what's wrong with me that another thing is piling on? What's, you know, the self-talk that we talk in these moments of breaking points. And it feels like everything is the very end, no more. But Luke 22 is telling us something significantly different. And I have this confidence because at this breaking point in history, when everything should have fallen apart, when everything should have broken, Jesus stepped into the darkness and he carried it through to the other side. Listen, Jesus didn't avoid it. Jesus didn't escape it. And Jesus didn't collapse under it. What Jesus did is he surrendered it. And we like the church word surrender. But most of you I know and love struggle with it in real life. You know how I know that? Because I do too. And when I can see it in myself, I can see it in you. We sing it. I surrender all. All to him I... You know the song. And you sing it and you love that song. How good are we at surrendering the breaking points at the feet of Jesus on the cross? When life seems too hard and too overwhelming, is prayer our go-to first? Or do we try to solve it and fix it, avoid it, escape it? Or do we simply carry it and surrender it? I think a lot of our lives would look very different if we actually surrendered. And I'm pretty certain, even as I talk about surrendering, you've already thought about that thing that you're holding on to that you should probably surrender. And so you're even slightly irritated with me now. Why don't you just move on, sing our song, let's do our communion so that I can go home and keep trying to fix the things that feel like a breaking point? Or at least drown my sorrows with lunch, right? Like this is the reality. Jesus surrendered, and what he said was so perfect and so beautiful. Father, not my will, but your will be done. And since Jesus absorbed that breaking point, my breaking point is no longer just a place of collapse. It's a place of surrender. That's what it is. When we find ourselves on the edge, under pressure, when everything feels like it's about to fall apart and give way and break, we don't have to run. We don't have to numb it. We don't even have to pretend we are okay. We don't. Because in the breaking point, we don't need a long prayer. We don't need an exhaustive prayer. We don't need perfect words. We don't need the perfect plan. We just simply pray the same prayer that Jesus prayed. Father, here it is. Not my will, but yours. Let me just tell you, that prayer doesn't make the pressure disappear. It doesn't. It does change what the breaking point becomes, however. It becomes the place where God meets us, the place where he begins his deepest, most beautiful work in our souls. The breaking point isn't where your story ends. It's actually where the story begins, where God does his deepest, most beautiful work. Like, that's the truth. So this means the breaking point is not the end of our stories. It actually might be the place where God begins something brand new, something fresh, something exciting. And how long do we avoid God doing that new thing in our lives because we're just trying to hold on to it and we neglect to just surrender it? What if the thing that we've been carrying for so long, if we would just surrender it, God could begin doing something really beautiful and brand new and exciting, the very thing that you've been hoping for and longing for all along anyway? Now listen, you might have to do it again and again and again and again. You all have heard my story multiple times. Tucker was 18 months old. He was really sick. I've told you the story about trying to kick the rock and break it at Mount Hood Legacy Hospital, right? Like, I was so irritated. I'm like, fine. And I remember just saying, shouting out to God, fine, he's yours. Surrender. And then I had to do it all over again 6 months ago. You would have thought I learned the first time. You would have thought. But hopefully what I learned is to go to God quicker and say, okay, he's yours. Not mine. Here it is. It's all you. Surrender is so important. It might be the very place where God begins to do something new. And for this reason, we can trust that because Jesus, he's already been there. He's already been there. And Jesus didn't just survive this, y'all. Jesus transformed it. And so you're going to be shocked because I'm done. I don't know what else to tell us. I tried all week to keep this sermon going because I thought it just feels incomplete. it feels incomplete. I wanted to keep reading about Peter's denial, right? But we already know that. We already know that. And by the way, it even says in the text, he followed Jesus at a distance. And I'm just telling you straight up right now, if you're trying to follow Jesus at a distance, you're going to fail. And you're going to fall. And it's going to be really hard. So that's the lesson I wanted to tell you, but here's where I'm at. We're at communion time. In Mountain View, we share in communion every single week. It's why we come to the table. The breaking point we've been talking about is not just something Jesus experienced. It's something he gave us in a new way through the cross. And last week we talked about Jesus sitting with his disciples, breaking the bread. He broke it and he said, this is my body and I'm giving it to you. And he took the cup and he blessed the cup. And so do you see it? The breaking point becomes the breaking of the bread. The place where everything should have fallen apart, where evil should have won, is actually the place where grace is actually given. It's everything that we've been talking about. When you're at your breaking point, when Jesus was at his breaking point, the greatest gift to us was ever given. This is the whole point. The breaking point becomes the breaking of the bread, and the cup is the weight of suffering and becomes something we receive as actually grace. And so before we eat the bread and we drink the cup, I just want to challenge you and invite you to do what Jesus did at his breaking point. That's all. And here's what I want you to do. Bring your life. Bring your life. Bring your pressure. Bring your fear. Bring your anxiety. Bring your uncertainty. Bring it all. Bring your spouse. Bring your house. I'm a poet here. Bring your kids. Your grandkids, your money, bring it all and surrender. All of it. And maybe this morning your prayer is so simple. Father, not my will, yours? Man, what area of your life do you need to declare that today? Let's not just sing about surrender. Let's actually do it. There's a table back here and one back here and one over here and one up in the balcony, and you're going to find two cups. The bottom cup has a piece of bread and the top cup has juice. It does represent Jesus' breaking point, his body broken. Broken. So that you and I have grace. His blood poured out so that we could be free. The weight does not have to break us. Think about those things as you eat the bread and drink the juice. You're free to go.